Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm Distinguished Research Fellow at the OIS. It's my great pleasure to be joined today by Mahua Mukherjee, who's Senior Research Fellow at the OIS. Now, we're here today to discuss the key messages that came from her paper, India's Ongoing Rooftop Solar Journey, 2017-2022. And this paper was published by the Institute at the beginning of November last year, 2022. Mahua, welcome back to the OIS podcast series.
Hello, David. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Well, Mahua, you know, the Indian government has announced some really very ambitious solar targets for both ground-mounted and indeed rooftop solar, and that was back in 2015. Now, the overall target was increased overnight from 20 gigawatts to 100 gigawatts. So, and let's start by just asking, how is that progressing? Are they doing well, ground-mounted and rooftop?
You're right, David. The overall solar target was raised fivefold soon after the new government took over in 2014. Out of this 100 gigawatts, 60 gigawatts was for ground-mounted solar and 40 was for rooftop solar. The results have been really striking. The ground-mounted target of 60 gigawatts installed capacity managed to be fully met by the end of 2022, and this was even despite COVID-related setbacks. Ground-mounted solar is now proceeding towards a new and even higher target. 60 gigawatts are already up and running, and about another 58 gigawatts are currently at various stages of procurement. But the rooftop solar target, which we're going to talk about today, was only 25% met by the intended due date of December 2022. The installed capacity of rooftop solar now is just a little over 10 gigawatts instead of the hoped for 40. So on one side, the India solar story overachieved, while the other side vastly underachieved.
Well, Mahua, that's really interesting. But before we get into the details of the rooftop solar sector in India, could you perhaps tell us a bit more about, you know, what possibly could explain the sharp differences in outcomes between the achievement of ground-mounted versus rooftop solar?
That's a great question. I think, personally, that the answer lies in the divergence between the respective business models and also in the respective transaction costs for ground-mounted or utility-scale projects versus rooftop projects. It now seems clear that these two factors, the transaction costs and the business models, in the Indian context, will always create a huge advantage for large-scale solar over small-scale solar. Apart from the different business models that we'll get to in a moment, there's also the nature and sophistication of the stakeholders, which is very different in each case. And if you add to that the big contrast in transaction costs, together these would all have to be the primary explanation for the striking difference in the speed of rollout performance. So if I may, just let me first give you a quick flavor of how ground-mounted utility-scale solar works in India so that we can contrast it with rooftop. Ground-mounted solar is a business-to-business or B2B proposition. Contracts are awarded through a very efficient and transparent, highly competitive tendering process that's run by the central government or by state government agencies. The competitively selected winning bidder is a financially strong, large private company that's been successfully awarded a power purchase agreement. Each bid has to specify the lowest unit rates that the bidder can charge for the power it proposes to supply to the off-taker for 25 years. The lowest priced pre-qualified bidder is selected. This type of a power purchase agreement, by the way, with its assurance of revenues for the next 25 years, allows the winning bidder to obtain long-term financing from a commercial bank, which sees the projected revenues as the source of its loan repayment. So, and the fuel, as we know, is the sunshine, and that's free. So it's the ability to offer a competitive price per kilowatt hour, which really depends on securing a low interest rate for the hardware. The debt service stream will be repaid from solar power sales. So that's the connection that explains why affordable climate finance is so important to developing countries. If that interest rate on the loan to buy the hardware is low, then the stream of loan repayments is low, meaning that the price of solar power can also be low. Then there'll be lots of uptake. So the solar power sales revenues essentially need to cover the loan repayments. And the other thing is that the transaction cost is low because the ground-mounted utility-scale generation company delivers the solar power from its project directly into the transmission grid, which is one off-taker. So just to sum up, before we move on to talk about rooftops, which are very different, all parties to the utility-scale transaction are sophisticated, credit-worthy. There's no retail consumer in the picture. So the off-taker is the transmission company, as we said, and that is usually fully digitized and largely automated. The staff are well-trained, the customer-supplier relationships governed by a long-term PPA, and there are few decision-makers. This is the B2B model. And when India's national solar program was initially launched in 2013, it was all ground-mounted at the time.
I get that. So if all the solar was ground-mounted just a decade ago, how and when did rooftop solar first enter the picture? And perhaps, you know, you could tell us, who are the different stakeholders in that rooftop sector?
Well, that's very interesting. A government-led rooftop solar program first appeared on the scene only in 2017. There was no prior experience in the Indian government with grid-connected rooftop solar at scale, nor was there any large-scale rooftop solar experience in any developing country, for that matter. Most developing countries have tried off-grid rooftop solar in rural, first-time electricity access programs. But urban grid-connected solar was entirely new. The primary success stories with grid-connected rooftop solar actually came from Germany, Australia, and the US. It's fair to say that Indian decision-makers, and their multilateral lenders for that matter, initially underestimated the difficulties of urban rooftop solar. They may have assumed that a continuation of the ground-mounted success story would apply. That could explain why rooftop solar, in hindsight, was burdened with what were probably unrealistic national targets right from the start. So now we come to the why rooftop solar. Well, that was because the Indian government had realized very soon after 2013 that there was not enough barren land available in the country to have an entirely ground-mounted program for all its clean energy targets. The use of idle rooftop space in urban areas was essential for decentralized clean energy generation. Also, by this time, around 2017, the costs of solar panels had started falling, and the government wanted to mainstream access to clean energy for the entire urban population, especially at the last mile in growing urban areas with rising electricity demand. So commercial banks initially refused to lend for rooftop solar, as it was not a proven technology in India. That's why the government took on $1 billion in sovereign loans from multilateral institutions for financing a dedicated urban rooftop solar program. It placed these funds at a large domestic commercial bank with instructions to on-lend the proceeds at below-market interest rates to qualified rooftop solar companies. In other words, it was the government that first launched a solar rooftop program to build a market and to generate lessons of experience in India, kind of a demonstration project, if you will. So the limited time introductory offer with below market interest rates, because these were World Bank interest rates, was to encourage first movers into the rooftop space, allow them to price the rooftop systems affordably by passing on the subsidy of the interest rate, and to mitigate their risks along the learning curve.
In fact, it's interesting because, of course, in the UK, we've seen a similar situation with solar panels for the residential sector with very high FIT payments for the early adopters, which I include myself. And now, of course, that's dropped off. Now we've started to see the adoption of solar. So coming back to India, you know, what in the first 5 years of the rooftop program, that's 2017 to 2022, you know, what was the kind of learning curve? What was revealed?
Well, it revealed that rooftop solar in India is the absolute antithesis of the ground-mounted solar business model in almost every respect. First, it's a business-to-consumer or B2C proposition. Each urban rooftop installation represents a transaction with a grid-connected electricity customer that wants to partly generate their own power on their roof in the daytime. They'll still need to buy electricity from the distribution company at night. By the way, battery costs would have to come down another 50% before they become a mainstream product in India. So for Indian solar rooftop systems, we're still only talking about daytime generation and consumption. So as we were saying, the decentralized solar power plants on rooftops are small and numerous, and here's the rub, they each require permission from a frequently struggling state electricity distribution company to connect to its distribution grid. The typical state distribution company is very different from the sophisticated and digitized automated transmission company we mentioned earlier. The typical distribution company in India is owned by a state government and is forced, because of prevailing state policies, to offer heavily subsidized electricity to a large share of its customers, quote unquote, who are voters. But the promised reimbursements for those subsidies are typically late from the state government. So the distribution company is always financially precarious, spending more than it takes in and waiting for the refunds. It also perceives a threat when its customers want to invest in rooftop solar because it sees a loss of revenue as those customers cut back on their grid purchases. No surprise, therefore, that the distribution company is not at all inclined to expedite permission to connect a rooftop solar system to its distribution grid. We mentioned that part of the distribution utility's financial problems come from having to sell below-cost power to certain customers. These are residential and agricultural connections. There's a built-in cross-subsidy in the Indian electricity tariff structure. Commercial and industrial customers must pay more per unit of electricity than it costs to serve them. They are overcharged so that the others can be subsidized. C&I, which is what we call commercial and industrial customers, are therefore the most lucrative customers of the distribution companies and the ones that they are most keen to hold on to. It means C&I is the well-paying revenue category that the DISCOM finds it, that's the distribution company, the DISCOM finds it most painful to lose to rooftop systems. Even the large residential customers who are partly unsubsidized and who pay well also hurt the DISCOM's finances when they replace part of their electricity purchases with rooftop solar generation. So the lack of support for rooftop solar from the distribution company has been one major reason for the slow growth rate of rooftop solar relative to its initial targets. And the other point we made was about transaction costs. Today, it's usually the small local rooftop installers who try to drum up rooftop solar business by educating an individual customer prospect and convincing them to make the investments. It's a laborious process. Rooftops in tropical countries are usually flat, and they have multiple competing uses, including sometimes harboring future hopes of adding another floor to the house. If that is in the owner's mind, then it's clearly unsuitable for a rooftop system. But suppose you have a willing customer. Whether we are talking of residential or factory or commercial rooftops, they must be evaluated individually by rooftop installers for suitability. In other words, to check if they have enough open space, if they're south-facing, shade-free, and structurally strong enough to bear the load. If all these are okay, then the installer or the system integrator next needs information on the customer's power requirement during the peak electricity demand season by going through 12 months of bills. Then they calculate what part of that peak capacity requirement can be met from the limited space on the rooftop, and so on. Clearly, the effort versus reward calculation for a rooftop installer is much better with a large C&I customer than going to residential users for very small orders. Once the rooftop system has been sized appropriately, then comes the question of financing. A high-end C&I customer or a very large unsubsidized residential user faces far fewer financing hurdles than a middle-class residential rooftop customer with possibly in India a rather non-existent credit history. But as mentioned, the very customers who are attractive to the lenders when they apply for a rooftop loan are exactly the same customers that the DISCOM does not want to lose, as we talked about a few minutes ago. This is the biggest built-in contradiction that needs to be resolved in Indian rooftops.
Yeah, Mahua, you know, I get that. So even, you know, within the solar rooftop segment, there's very clearly a preference amongst suppliers and installers to cater for the kind of commercial and industrial segment rather than the residential sector. Now, coming back to your paper, if I can, you know, you talk about some very interesting business models that have emerged kind of spontaneously from the commercial and industrial segment, as you call them. Now, could you perhaps share with our listeners a bit more about these rooftop business models?
I think you're referring to the various third-party business models. Previously, all rooftop customers had to buy and fully pay for the hardware up front under the so-called CapEx model, where the full capital expenditure was invested by the consumer. Now, for attractive rooftop customers who are, say, high-end businesses or industries with strong credit, there have emerged third parties in India called RESCOs. RESCO stands for Renewable Energy Service Company, because these companies sell clean energy as a service. The RESCO companies are willing to take a loan to finance their solar rooftop system, place it on the high-end business's roof, and contractually sell them the units of electricity that's generated on their own rooftop. In other words, if attractive rooftop customers are lucky enough to be courted by a RESCO, they can enjoy solar power without paying for any of the hardware. In other words, they make a zero upfront payment. They can just buy the solar energy kilowatt hours from the third-party supplier on their roof and show it as an operating expenditure on their income statement. That's why this is called the OPEX model. We've presented four or five interesting variations of the OPEX model in the annex to the paper, and that are all prevalent in India today, depending on the customer's circumstances. So these RESCOs have basically highly adapted their models to the customer's individual needs. But the RESCO company takes a risk by investing in all the hardware and selling solar as a service. It repays its loan from the power sales to its customers. Needless to say, it's not easy to get RESCOs to offer this attractive proposition with zero upfront costs for the customer to the lower income customers who really need it due to affordability constraints. RESCOs have been mainly serving well-off, credit-worthy C&I customers, as expected, because those are the ones who pay on time, and that allows the RESCO to repay its loans on time. So it's no surprise, then, that the Indian rooftop model was mainly growing on C&I rooftops from 2017 to 2020. Those were the attractive customers, either with deep pockets if they purchased their own equipment under the CapEx model, or alternatively with good credit if they were given offers to buy from third party under the OPEX model. Residential customers, this is the point that I want to mention and emphasize, residential customers played a very limited role in the first wave of rooftop solar in India. That's a big lesson. They were small, not credit worthy, and had no access to finance from local commercial banks for investing in rooftop solar. This made the customer acquisition cycle too long for fledgling rooftop solar installers, and this group was therefore generally avoided. That's the residential. That's all starting to change as we enter the second phase now, but it's still fair to say that most of the 10 gigawatts of installed rooftop solar capacity is sitting on C&I roofs today. I should mention that the RESCOs were often aggregators as well. They had to move fast because this attractive World Bank loan for rooftop solar was going to run out. So they signed up thousands of attractive C&I customers that didn't want to own the rooftop hardware, but just wanted solar as a service. So RESCOs applied for the attractive low-cost funding from the government's sovereign loan that had been placed with the commercial bank. Through aggregation, they were able to obtain volume discounts on the hardware purchase, and they were also benefiting from the low-cost funding, so they made very fast progress on C&I roofs. If there had been no pandemic delay and no 3 lost years of rooftop installation out of the 5 years of the program so far, then it's likely that India's rooftop total might be around 16 to 18 gigawatts today instead of 10 gigawatts. So we see that even in the best-case scenario of no COVID, it's clear that 40 gigawatts was still highly unrealistic by 2022 as an initial target that the government wanted to achieve in 5 years.
Yes, Maha, I can see the importance of that and also, of course, of the RESCOs and finance in the development of rooftop solar in India. Now, you've mentioned that there were two phases of the Indian rooftop solar program, and I believe we're now in the second phase. Could you perhaps share with our listeners more about this new phase?
Around 2019, after the first 2 years, the government looked at the experience and understood the implications of the market-based system that they had put in place together with their multilateral lenders for the $1 billion sovereign loan they took. By this, I mean that they had entirely delegated to the commercial bank all the lending decisions for who could access the low-cost funding that they had sourced from the World Bank. The commercial lender that was effectively in charge of phase one was sending the rooftop financing only to the strongest credits, who were C&I. I should clarify that residential consumers were not actually eligible for the sovereign loan's low-cost funding because rooftop consumers were already receiving other support at the time. They qualified in principle, although this was rarely realized, they qualified in principle for an upfront 40% subsidy from the central government on the cost of their solar panels, provided they were sourced from domestic manufacturers. So the residential consumers were being helped that way, but the government didn't realize that the rooftop solar installers would avoid them. So the 40% subsidy was never really much utilized. Anyway, during the performance review, the government was unhappy at the avoidance of residential customers and was also hearing a litany of complaints about rooftop solar from DISCOMs in all the states. A big lesson that was that the reason for very slow growth of the rooftop sector had a lot to do with the distribution companies' lack of enthusiasm. Distribution companies watched RESCO aggregators sweep up their best C&I customers and become independent solar power suppliers to these attractive high tariff payers. So phase two of the rooftop program that you asked about was carefully based on the early lessons and was announced in 2019, shortly before the pandemic. Its main features were to create a central role for the DISCOMs in implementing this rooftop solar program, and this is the important part, with financial incentives to DISCOMs for a speedy rollout of more rooftop solar in various urban areas. In other words, they were being paid the money that was claimed they were losing. And the other thing was an intentional focus on residential rooftops in phase two.
Now, Mahua, can we perhaps end this podcast by talking about the role of government? Now, I understand that the government has thought hard about how to make rooftop solar accessible to residential customers, and within that group also, of course, the low consumption, low income group of consumers. Now, the government, I see, also realises it wants to have a seat at the table for the distribution companies or DISCOMs, and to seek incentive for the DISCOM's cooperation within the rooftop program. So in other words, the government wants to cover all sectors. Now, perhaps you can share with us, what's actually going on and how's it kind of materializing?
Yes, that's very interesting. It's still very much a work in progress, David. Phase two hasn't fully taken off yet. It was carefully designed and announced, and then a couple of months later came the pandemic. So things kind of came to a halt. Phase two hasn't really therefore taken off yet because this is the first year of normal operations, 2023, after the pandemic. So a number of states have yet to opt in formally and qualify for the generous handouts that the central government has made available for them to incentivize their DISCOMs to cooperate with rooftops. But it's definitely moving along. And some places like Delhi are far ahead in coverage on actually residential rooftops as well. Despite the 40% capital subsidy for residences, it turns out that the hardware costs are still too high for most to meet without an affordable loan. So the lending part has to be cracked as well. That's another lesson from this program. Many residential customers are looking at around $10,000 to $13,000 equivalent for their system. And even after chopping off 40% of the cost up front with that capital subsidy, they would still need a loan that requires a 20% down payment only so that they can borrow the remaining 80% and repay it out of their savings on the grid electricity bill. So the idea is that they take a loan and they pay the rest and they whatever they would have previously paid to the grid, they instead pay in their debt service. So it's easy to see why commercial and industrial customers are more attractive to both rooftop installers and also to lenders, because their roofs are larger, the load is larger, the ticket size of the order is larger, the customer is more sophisticated, and therefore the customer acquisition process is likely to be shorter, and the customer is likely to be approved for a loan more quickly so that the installation process can be completed faster. But for now, as we've said, the government's focus is on residential rooftops, and all subsidies for C&I customers have been stopped, removed. Under pressure from the DISCOMs, generous net metering programs were already dismantled in 2020. So the current state of play is that C&I rooftop investments still continue to grow, despite all the sweeteners having been stripped away now. And residential rooftops have also started to grow slowly because DISCOMs are actually being paid to include residential rooftops. And it turned out that DISCOMs actually had a lot of information on creditworthiness because they knew better than the banks knew how regularly certain customers paid their bills. So the government has been trying to instigate a partnership between the banks and the DISCOMs for credit information. And the government is working hard to court these two parties, DISCOMs and lenders, as India moves slowly towards its 40 gigawatt target. So it will get there a few years later than planned, but we all believe it'll surely get there.
And indeed, of course, we all hope it's going to get there as well. It's certainly a very fast and evolving story. And thank you very much, Muhur, for your time and the update today. And as always, I've really enjoyed our conversation that builds on the messages from your paper, India's Ongoing Rooftop Solar Journey 2017 to 2022. And just to remind our listeners, that's available on the OIES website for download and for reading. So I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.